Chapter 64. Complect. Complect. C-O-M-P-L-E-C-T. To embrace, to join by weaving or twining together. Interweave. To be woven or interconnected. From Latin, complecti. To entwine, encircle, compass, enfold. From com, together, and plectare, to weave. Braid. Kakashi wanders back to Konoha sometime in the mid-afternoon, pleasantly tired and satisfied with a morning spent running through his most commonly used jutsus out in the forest. His head is agreeably empty, and he feels perfectly calm and at peace with the world. So, of course, it stands to reason, with the way the world works, that the first thing he finds inside the gates is a war zone. Coming to a dead stop, Kakashi blinks at the maze of streets, where people are moving like they're about to get a fireball dropped on their heads, if they're not undercover as soon as humanly possible. There are signs of destruction littering the area, including claw marks on some of the buildings, and several places that are liberally dusted with what looks like foo's scale powder. "Get out of the open!" someone hisses above his head, insistent and close to frantic. "Are you trying to make yourself a target?" Kakashi blinks, long and slow, and raises his head to find Aoba perched high up in a tree by the guardhouse, clinging to the branches with something like desperation. Another careful sweep of the area, and Kakashi tucks his hands into his pockets, then leaps up to land in an easy crouch on the branch. "Something wrong, Yamashiro?" he asks mildly. Aoba gives him a faintly wild-eyed look. "You mean other than the village turning into ground zero of the kitty game version of the apocalypse? Oh no, everything's just peachy!" One leg of Aoba's uniform is covered in a familiar sticky goo. Kakashi eyes it for a moment, because he's never seen Utagata be anything but polite and amiable even in the midst of their fight with Pain. And if he's attacking Konoha Jonin now... "Game?" he repeats. Aoba makes a sound of abject despair. "We're worth points! Poor Tenzo! He'd have gotten hit by three of those monsters at the same time if Shisui hadn't grabbed him." By those monsters, Kakashi is going to assume Aoba means the Jinchuriki, and that, since he's still breathing, he hasn't referred to the children like that in Kurama's earshot. Though, to be fair, Aoba probably means it in a different way than most, since Kakashi's heard him refer to pretty much all children like that. "That bad?" he asks dryly, and wonders if he should pull his hitayate up. The Sharingan could probably save him a lot of grief if something's happening between the Jinchuriki. Aoba's shudder speaks for itself. "They go for Tokujo and regular Jonin first," he warns darkly. "Keep to the shadows, and you might be safe heading home." Kakashi looks him over for a moment, then decides that he'd much rather face things head on than spend all day cowering in a tree. "All right," he agrees, mild as milk, and drops back down to the street. "Have fun hiding." "Don't say I didn't warn you," Aoba calls after him, a note of dire caution in his voice. "I did! I did explicitly!" Kakashi waves over his shoulder, rounding the corner without looking back. A portion of his attention is on his surroundings, but not that much more than normal. The Jinchuriki kids probably aren't banking on stealth, and Kakashi has no doubt he'll be able to hear them coming. It's enough to make him wonder, though, if Kurama planned this game in order to get the other village leaders to back down in their arguments about separating the Jinchuriki, or deciding where they should end up. After all, Konoha has a reputation in the elemental countries for being slightly left of center when it comes to power levels, and what's considered normal. Even after the Kyuubi attack, Konoha is probably the best place, at least as far as shinobi are concerned, to stick a bunch of resentful, overpowered children who have no intention of conforming to normal human limits. If Konoha managed to deal with Kushina, Minato, Jiraiya, Tsunade, and Orochimaru, not to mention Kakashi himself, all going through their teenage years, and to have the village remain standing, they'll probably survive Kurama's bunch. Hopefully. With a little luck. A squad of Chunin hustles past Kakashi, moving like they're in enemy territory, and Kakashi watches with amusement as they go, automatically reaching for his Icha Icha book. It's hard to look less impressed with anything than he does when he's wandering the streets reading tastefully erotic literature, and Kakashi does have a reputation to maintain. Friend Killer Kakashi. That's what they used to call him. There were points when Kakashi would have done anything to rid himself of the name, but actually doing it was as simple as reading in public. Kakashi appreciates the irony there, and he'd much rather be thought a pervert bastard than a murderer, so it's just slightly possible that he plays things up in the name of actually being able to choose his own nickname. Not that anyone else needs to know that. He considers, for a moment, going back to his apartment. But it's a nice day. The air isn't too cold and the sun is out, and there's a promise of chaos that's sure to be entertaining. Decided, he tucks his nose into his book, flips to one of the dog-eared parts, and turns his steps towards the center of the village. Barely 3 blocks, and there's a sudden screech of pure delight. Aha! Kakashi thinks, and chooses that moment to stub his toe on the cobblestones. Whoops, he says out loud, tripping forward for a moment before he can get his balance back. Something flies bare centimeters above his head, and Kakashi straightens back up and keeps walking without looking up from his book. There's a moment of stunned silence, quickly followed by rapid footsteps and a startled squawk. A blur of motion in red and blue signals the offending party's getting closer, but Kakashi just keeps up his meandering pace, giggling a little at a particularly, robust passage. He sways out of the path of a swing that goes wide, long cat claws just missing his cheek, and then hops over Orochi's lunge as Yugito flips out of the way. The former Iwa Nin is definitely not trying to keep from hitting him, Kakashi thinks, landing lightly, and tucks one hand into his pocket just to increase the taunt. Oh my, he says, pitched just loud enough to carry without seeming intentional. A little breezy today, isn't it? One step around the corner, and he tucks himself back into an alley, lowering his book just in time to see Yugito come skidding past the turn, looking like she's out to murder someone. Before she can make it more than a handful of steps, though, Roshi is there, already bearing down on her. Yugito hisses, then claws her way up the side of a building, and leaps to the next, and vanishes into a thicket of rooftops. Damn it! Roshi huffs, then catches sight of another flash of blue back the way he came, spins and bolts after Utakata. The teenager yelps, then raises his pipe. A flicker of vast, effervescent chakra curls around him, and silvery bubbles fill the street. Roshi tries to stop in time, but a flash of gold chains whirl out from under a willow's trailing branches to hit the red-headed man in the back. He slams face first into the wall of bubbles with a curse fit to blister, and they pop with a vast sound that echoes through the district. Goo flies, and despite himself, Kakashi winces a little. He definitely doesn't envy whatever Genin teams get put on cleanup for this mess. In fact, he's pretty sure that falls under the heading of Fate's Worse Than Death. Come on, there's another tunnel over here, a vaguely familiar voice says, and 3 small shadows separate from the willow, stumbling into the street. Kakashi blinks, then raises a brow, because if he's not mistaken, that's Itachi's little brother tugging Naruto and Gaara along. Huh. I see it, Gaara says, even as Naruto offers a cheery wave to Utakata on the other end of the street. Utakata waves back, looking like he's grinning, and takes off running again. It proves to be a smart choice, because a moment later there's a hiss of steam and a smell, almost like burning sugar, and Orochi drags himself free of the sticky field, lava creeping over his skin. Drops splatter over the cobblestones, melting them into pockets of slag, and Orochi shakes his head like a dog emerging from a river. Of hell, probably, given the molten rock pooling around his feet. "You," he growls, taking a threatening step towards the three children. In unison, all three of them shriek and bolt, Gaara turning just enough to throw up a wall of sand behind them as they scramble over a low wall and disappear into someone's garden. With a sound of exasperation, Roshi abandons his pursuit, heading back the way he came instead of following. A little incredulous, but mostly amused, Kakashi eyes the deep craters in the street, the pool of slime, the handful of unpopped bubbles floating like innocuous toys when they're really dastardly traps, and reminds himself not to piss off the Hokage for the next few days. There's no way he wants to get stuck on the cleanup crew. This is definitely Kurama's way of getting the Kage to agree to leave the Jinchuriki in his custody. Kakashi is absolutely certain of it. And he has to admire the sheer cunning behind the idea. Truly beautiful. Deciding that it would be a little too over the top to whistle cheerfully, Kakashi wanders back out into the street, heading towards the river in order to avoid the apocalyptic wasteland the other end of the alley has turned into. There's a familiar chakra signal up ahead, and Kakashi offers Raido a carefree smile as he approaches. "You might want to take the other street," he says, and can't help but eye the four large bags of groceries the man is carrying with interest. "Planning a party?" Raido blinks, glancing down at his shopping like he's never seen it before, and then manages a weak, slightly hunted smile in return. "Oh, no, of course not. Genma's just hungry. Genma's been really hungry lately." Given that Genma survives on coffee, questionable humor, and whatever sustenance more attentive people can shove down his throat, Kakashi finds this slightly doubtful. But he doesn't call Raido on the lie, just hums, faintly pointedly, and watches Raido start to sweat and fidget before he drops his gaze back to his book. "I'm glad he's finally started eating spinach. Lots of nutrients, right?" Raido's slightly horrified gaze darts to the bunches of spinach, the one food Genma has always loathed unconditionally, that are spilling out of his shopping bag. Then blurts, "Have to go, bye," and vanishes in a desperate swirl of leaves. Well, clearly Genma and Raido are up to something. Knowing Genma as he does, though, Kakashi is going to assume he has everything under control until proven otherwise. Genma's good at asking for help when he needs it, too. If he gets in over his head, he'll say something. Taking a hopping step forward, Kakashi neatly dodges the burst of scale powder that hits the wall behind him, then sidesteps Fu herself as she slams down onto the stone, swipes at his leg, curses when she fails to grab him, and scrambles up the side of a store as Orochi makes a triumphant noise. Seeing the older man coming out of the corner of his eye, Kakashi substitutes a mannequin from the clothing shop he's passing for himself and reappears at the end of the block as he casually flips to the next page. With a sound of inarticulate rage, Roshi crashes into the mannequin, tumbles back to his feet, and shoots Kakashi a nasty look before leaping after Fu. This is much more entertaining than lazing around his apartment, Kakashi thinks, hiding a grin. "You're a bastard. Anyone ever told you that?" someone asks dryly. And Kakashi glances up to find Kurama perched on a balcony railing above. He gives the man a crinkle-eyed smile, twiddling his fingers in an idle wave, and turns to the next page. "I'm absolutely certain no one has ever maligned my character like that," he lies shamelessly. Snorting, Kurama drops down to land lightly beside him, and when he catches Kakashi eyeing him, expectant and assessing, he waves him off. "If I was gonna take you out, dog boy, you wouldn't even see me coming. Relax." "I am relaxed," Kakashi says, in perfectly mild protest. Up ahead of them, there's a flurry of movement, a slew of vicious curses, and a burst of steam that's strong enough to make Kakashi sway on his feet. and he prudently picks a side road to turn down. He still hasn't forgotten how Han was able to move faster than even the Sharingan could catch, and knock him through the air like a twig, and it isn't something he wants to repeat. Kurama's huff of laughter is quiet, but still entirely amused. "Yeah, you are," he agrees, casting Kakashi a sideways look. There's something like a grin tugging at one corner of his mouth, even if it isn't fully apparent yet. "You know the kid's just upped how much you're worth, right? I think it's almost as much as a Kage now."
"I must not be trying hard enough," Kakashi laments. "A few more misses might do it, don't you think?"
To his faint surprise, Kurama laughs. "Yeah," he agrees, and nudges Kakashi sideways, down another alley half-choked by trees. As running footsteps approach, Kakashi just has time to glance over at him before he's gone, vanishing into the twisted branches, and then the ground is shifting under his feet. Without even looking down, Kakashi hops over the patch of sand that tries to grab his ankles, pointedly raising his book again. He idly ducks a lash of chains that almost take out a tree, and catches a kunai that comes flying at his covered eye with impressive aim. For a moment, he turns it over in his fingers, then shrugs and pockets it, never pausing. There's a sound of outrage from behind him, and children's half-clumsy steps closing in. Half an instant later, though, there's a flurry of yelps, a crow of victory from Fu, and Han's deep laugh. Naruto, Gaara, and Sasuke beat a hasty retreat, chased by Han, and Kakashi raises a brow at Kurama as the redhead slides back out of the shadows. "Shinobi tag," Kurama says, and there's a spark of mischief in his red eyes. "Stealth's totally an allowable tactic." Kakashi casts a glance back at the main street, the screeches and cries nearly audible and interspersed with flashes of light, bursts of sand, and flying chains and kunai, and then turns a bland stare on Kurama.
"I said allowable," Kurama reminds him, "not typical."
Kakashi accepts the correction with an agreeable hum, scanning the next page for any particularly interesting bits. Lots of heaving bosoms in this part, but not much else. Kakashi's in the mood for something a little less work-safe.
"Quite the game," he says.
Kurama's smile is faintly fond.
"They're having fun."
Which does not preclude terrorizing the village, Kakashi thinks, but doesn't say. He's pretty sure Kurama doesn't give a damn. Instead, he tips his head to avoid another burst of scale powder, sidesteps Yugito as she goes bolting past with Karin on her back, and sways out of the way as Fu takes another swipe at him, as she follows at a sprint. When he glances over, Kurama is back in the trees and mostly out of sight, leaning against the wall of the building and watching him with a sly grin. And Kakashi can't let that stand. He follows Kurama, ducking under a low-hanging branch, and joins him in the little alcove. Sunlight slides in through an opening in the branches, making Kurama's hair glow like garnet held up to the light, a sharp brilliance in counterpoint to the warm color of his skin.
"You keep avoiding them," Kakashi says mildly, and the space is tight enough that he's definitely inside Kurama's personal bubble,
though thankfully the claws haven't come out yet.
"Someone less clever might think you didn't want to play."
Kurama gives him an unimpressed look and doesn't move.
"Good thing you're clever, then," he says dryly.
And it's the most insulting compliment Kakashi has ever been given. To be expected, probably, given the source. Kakashi hums.
"They don't need you to play to be terrifying," he says, testing. "Especially to the village leaders."
Red eyes narrow faintly.
"I don't know what the hell you think you're implying," he starts testily.
At the same moment, there's a high-pitched scream from somewhere close by. "Run! Run, run, run!" A familiar voice shrieks, and a second later, Shisui and Tenzo book it down the alley. Shisui's looking like he's seen better days, covered head to toe in scale powder, with most of his uniform in shreds. Tenzo's hand on his pants seems to be the only thing holding them up, but the Mokuton user isn't exactly fresh as a daisy either. One sleeve is smoking, and the bottom of it is charred, while his hair looks like that one time he got in the way of Kakashi's Raiton Jutsu, stuck up in some of the most gravity-defying tufts Kakashi has ever seen, even in a mirror. As they bolt, Tenzo's free hand twists into the snake seal, and Kakashi's eyes widen. He shoves Kurama to the side as the ground surges, and the tree beside them comes to life, growing with a groan and a crash to fill the alley completely. The buildings shake, the earth trembles, and the remaining trees sway madly as cobblestones shatter and go flying. In the dust of the aftermath, Kakashi coughs a little, pushing away from the thankfully unbroken building, and says blandly, "I'm going to put them on D ranks for the next year." Startlingly close, Kurama snorts, and a hand touches Kakashi's chest. "Do it tonight," he advises, and then glances up and stops. Equally startled, Kakashi looks back at him. There's maybe 3 inches between them, pressed up against the wall by a half-fallen tree and a chunk of stone as they are. Kurama's palm is almost precisely over his heart, but for the first time in years, that particular touch isn't a threat. It's warm, and Kakashi can feel the heat even through his flak jacket, can feel Kurama's breath against his cheek in the sudden stillness. "Oh," Kurama says, but it's distant, distracted. Kakashi can't even manage that much. He leans in closer before he can help himself, one hand braced against the wall and the other falling automatically to Kurama's waist. That's warm as well. And Kurama smells of something that's a little musky and a little sweet, traced through with a subtle bite like new spring growth. His fingers curl against cloth with firm skin beneath, and Kakashi feels his gaze dropping from wide crimson eyes, watching the brush of darker red lashes against Kurama's cheek, falling to lips as they shape his name without a sound, and he wants to kiss Kurama, Kakashi thinks. And that one realization, so objectively small, is nevertheless overwhelming. Flicking a glance back up, he catches Kurama's gaze, watches something like mingled surprise and interest kindle there. Kurama is thinking about kissing him, too, and that's somehow even more astonishing to consider. "Oh," Kurama says again, and then his hand is on Kakashi's face, startlingly hot, and nails slightly scrape his cheek as fingers slide back to bury themselves in his hair. A touch, a tug light enough to be more suggestion than request, and the fingers of Kurama's other hand skim the edge of his mask, where cloth meets skin. It's a question more than anything, and there's nothing in Kakashi's head but heat and the friction spark of unfamiliar skin against his own. He leans into Kurama's touch, leans down until their noses brush and the entire world seems made up of dark skin and bright eyes and crimson hair, and the heat of Kurama's breath. Kurama's the one to close the last hair's breadth of distance between them, to pull Kakashi's mask down, to press up and fit his mouth to Kakashi's. The taste of him is as startling as that realization was. Would be enough to knock Kakashi back on his heels, except then he'd have to stop kissing Kurama. He really, really doesn't want to. Kissing Kurama isn't a fight or a competition, the way Kakashi might have expected if he'd thought about it. It's exploration, curiosity, a touch of teasing that draws him in. It's a scrape of teeth that's just enough to make his breath catch. A hint of heat and banked fire and the trace of deadly claws against his scalp. Kurama makes a sound against his mouth, caught partway between amusement and interest, and Kakashi slides a hand up along a lean waist, traces up the line of his back to get his fingers in Kurama's hair. It's silken soft, feathery in his grip, and he likes the way a slight tug makes Kurama's breath hitch, likes how Kurama pulls him in, deepening the kiss as he leans back against the wall, how Kakashi's faint groan at bodies colliding makes Kurama laugh a little, only to have the sound stolen as their mouths meet again.
likes the way Kurama traces a thumbnail down the nape of his neck, following the line of his spine, and makes a light shiver run through him. When they part, just enough to look at each other, Kurama's breathing is unsteady, and Kakashi can't remember feeling more victorious about anything in his life. There's a pause, a moment, and then Kurama offers up a grin even as he pulls Kakashi one step closer.
Maybe you should try that again, he suggests. I'm trying to decide if you're better than Piranha Breath and I need more evidence.
Kakashi would be offended if he weren't quite so on board with the idea of again. Clearly you weren't paying attention if you haven't already made up your mind. Trying again is probably a good idea.
Kurama's amused huff is obvious so close. Yeah, well, can't let it...
A shriek like a demon dragged up from hell shatters the air, and Kakashi twitches back automatically, grabbing for a kunai. The scream dissolves into curses a moment later, though, and wings buzz above them as Fu passes overhead. Kakashi follows her path a little nervously, because he just kissed Kurama and... Gods, if the kids saw... He just kissed Kurama. He kissed Kurama.
Kakashi? Kurama asks, sounding faintly amused, and takes a step forward.
Kakashi's brain is too busy stalling out to register it, though, and he takes a step back. Then another, because retreat seems like the best option while every last scrap of logic starts gibbering madly. Because Kurama is Kurama, but Kurama is also the Kyubi no Kitsune, and Kakashi just had his tongue in the Kyubi no Kitsune's mouth, and he enjoyed it. Moreover, he wants to do it again. In this situation, there is only one course of action. Later, Kakashi says, and calls up a Shushin. His last clear image is Kurama rolling his eyes with an expression of sheer exasperation, before the world blurs, and he staggers across an open rooftop. Somewhere behind him, Fu makes a sound of victory, but that just makes Kakashi think of Kurama pressing up against him, and he uses Kawarimi on instinct, substituting a log for himself and immediately throwing himself into another Shushin. Kakashi is absolutely running away, but he can't even begin to bring himself to care. Sakumo catches the scent on the wind as he pauses on a small rise, and he turns his face up, trying to get a clearer idea of it. Something floral, almost like vanilla, but with a sharper, greener edge, and a trace of dry leaves and scales beneath. He might not have Kakashi's nose, not quite, but that, at least, is familiar. Frowning faintly, Sakumo picks up an easy, loping run, careful to keep his footfalls nearly silent. The far side of the Hokage Mountain is generally empty, one of the reasons he picked it for his wanderings. Konoha feels like a chokehold, and though most people seem to have forgotten their old animosity in the face of his and Kushina's resurrection, Sakumo hasn't forgotten. It's almost impossible to look at the faces of former neighbors, teammates, comrades, and not think of their derision and fury and contempt. After all, for all the vague awareness of his time spent dead, for Sakumo, it still feels like the events that drove him to take his own life happened mere weeks ago. It's not a comfortable feeling to have, and for all his new peace with Kakashi, and maybe especially because of his new peace with Kakashi, Sakumo can't simply forget. Thinking in the quiet of the forest is easier. He's more readily himself here, more easily able to remember just why he made the choices he did. And maybe none of them were good choices or the right ones, but they were still his. Some of them, at least, he knows he wouldn't change. The quiet is broken now, though. Not by much, and not alarmingly. But there's a scuff of shinobi sandals against grass and stone, a murmur of voices trying to stay inaudible. Sakumo listens and slows his steps, slipping into the shadows of the mountain's rocky outcroppings as he approaches. "Just another moment," a boy says, distracted but intent. These are more complicated than I'm used to. I'm sorry.
Breathe, Kabuto.
A familiar voice interrupts, edged with a weariness that's bone deep.
We have time for you to concentrate. We do not have time for a second try.
Yes, Orochimaru-sama. Kabuto says, and then lapses into quiet mutters that are definitely to himself. Sakumo takes another step forward, eyes on the last tree that separates him from Orochimaru, and then goes perfectly, precisely still.
I won't let you hurt Orochimaru-sama,
a child says, clear and cold, and the kunai resting against his spine doesn't waver. From around the tree, there's instant silence, and then quick steps. A moment later, and a boy with gray hair and dark eyes appears, bristling, with scalpels made of chakra braced between his fingers and a dangerous light in his eyes. Hatake coloring is the only thing Sakumo can think, and he suddenly finds that he can't quite breathe. But there are no Hatake left outside of Kakashi and himself. And surely, surely if anyone he was with had gotten pregnant, they would have told him. Unless a little voice in the back of his head whispers, you were dead and couldn't be told, and who would want a child whose father brought such shame on the village? What do you want? The boy demands. There's ink smeared across his cheek and a hastily capped bottle of it spilling from his weapons pouch, but he doesn't seem to notice as he comes to a halt, watching Sakumo like he's the enemy. Sakumo supposes that in this case he really is.
To repay a favor, he says, before he can even consciously consider the words,
but they're absolutely true. Orochimaru helped them against Akatsuki, even when he was a member. He gave them the means to escape, and Sakumo can't quite forget his expression when he confessed to killing children. Can't overlook the way Kabuto looks like he could be a Hatake himself, and how he's clearly devoted to Orochimaru if he's helping him escape. Kabuto's eyes flicker away from Sakumo to the child behind him, and then narrow. He opens his mouth, an edge of something vicious in his face. But before he can say it, Orochimaru says clearly,
let him through, Kabuto.
Kabuto looks like he would much rather stab Sakumo in the throat, but he shifts back, even if he doesn't release his jutsu. Sakumo steps past him without much concern, ducking a low-hanging bough and stepping into a small clearing right outside a narrow crevice of rock. A tunnel, probably, given the way it smells, but that's for later concentration. Orochimaru is seated in the grass, one arm held awkwardly across his lap to keep the ink on it from dripping. His hair has been chopped short, and the change is almost jarring against Sakumo's expectation, because that hair was the first thing he recognized about Orochimaru back in the cell. Strange, now, to see him without it. I'm sorry, he says, dropping to one knee in front of the sannin and reaching out to touch the slightly ragged edges before he can stop himself. I should have moved faster. Something strange flickers over Orochimaru's face, too fast to read, and then he makes a sound of derisive amusement.
Only you, Hatake. I'm sure I've called you a fool before.
You accuse me of playing a humble one, Sakumo parries, and glances down to take in the outline of a seal on Orochimaru's pale skin.
That will undo Jiraiya's handiwork since he sealed my chakra.
Eerie golden eyes narrow as Orochimaru studies him.
What now, Hatake? Will you go running back to Konoha like a good little dog and tell them I've escaped?
There's a sharply indrawn breath from behind him, and Sakumo twists to look at the child who threatened him. It's a young boy, likely under 10, with red clan markings around pale green eyes and dotting his forehead. Red beads clasp white hair, pulling it back from his face, and despite the faintly sickly cast to his skin, he looks all too ready to throw himself at Sakumo in defense of Orochimaru. That's something of a theme, Sakumo is realizing.
For a morally lacking evil scientist, you don't seem to have any problem inspiring loyalty in your followers,
Sakumo says wryly, glancing between the two poise and then back at Orochimaru.
Children are easily led,
Orochimaru says coolly, ignoring the fact that both boys can obviously hear him.
Kimimaro, I believe you were instructed to stay in the base.
Kimimaro squares his shoulders and faces the reprimand without wavering.
Forgive me, Orochimaru-sama. Kabuto requested assistance, and I wouldn't allow them to leave me behind.
I was hardly about to break you out on my own without backup, Kabuto adds, faintly tart, and pointedly pushes past Sakumo to pull out his ink and brushes again as he reaches for Orochimaru's arm.
I'm not going to report you,
Sakumo says, watching the careful strokes of Kabuto's brush. The decision is absolutely spur of the moment, and probably idiotic on top of that, but that doesn't mean it can't feel right. Konoha certainly hasn't, since he got back, and even if Kakashi is in the village, even if it's the village and the people Sakumo would have given his life for, and nearly did, it's not easy to look anyone there in the face. But Orochimaru is something a little different. He glances up to hold Orochimaru's gaze, allows himself a smile, relieved now that the decision is made and glad to have done it. I'm going to come with you, he finishes, and has the pleasure of watching honest shock flash across Orochimaru's face, unable to be hidden.
You're going to keep me in line, Hatake?
It's sharp-edged and biting, even as the startled expression fades. But Sakumo can practically see the thoughts racing behind Orochimaru's angry facade. He dips one shoulder in a half-hearted shrug.
If you want to see it that way, you could. But you're leaving and...
His smile turns rueful, and he knows Orochimaru can see the shadows in it.
I think I need to get away.
Orochimaru stares at him for a long minute, as still as a snake, barely blinking. Then deliberately he looks away, down at the seal as Kabuto finishes inking it, and they both watch as the lines flare gold and then go dark. In an instant, the sense of Orochimaru's presence floods back, chakra as abrasive and unsettling as ever, like a cobra sliding over your foot. Not preparing to bite, just there, but always with the possibility that it could. How fitting, Sakumo thinks a little wryly. A shinobi who feels like all shinobi should, were the outsides to match the insides. No wonder the civilians have always been so afraid of him. Orochimaru rises smoothly, only swaying a little bit once he's on his feet, and immediately steps away once he has his balance. In a heartbeat, Kabuto and Kimimaro are both behind him, and the sannin doesn't pause.
It's a long walk to the border,
he says, not quite over his shoulder, but it's close enough to an invitation for Sakumo. He hurries to catch up, and when he falls into step, Orochimaru only casts him a careful, curious look before turning away. It's enough, Sakumo thinks. And for the first time since he came back to Konoha, the knot in his chest is finally unraveling.